south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
You know, a couple of shows back, I was talking about when people die down here, especially when they're on the job, they put a black bow, a big one, usually about the size of a briefcase or bigger, on the door facing the street of their place of business or on the front door of the house. And you see them on cars and motorcycles and chicken buses too, if that's where the death occurred. And you know, even though I've been down here 27 years now, maybe 28, I'm not Mr. Know-It-All when it comes to Latin America. By the way, in all that time, I've been back to the U.S. less than 2 whole weeks. How about that? Do I miss it? Nope, not a single thing about it, except the customer service, how I remembered it to be anyway. I'm sure anything's better than the customer service down here. Anyway, like I said, since I've been down here such a long time, people think I'm Mr. Know-It-All, but I'm not. In fact, I learn something new every day. In fact, here's what I learned just yesterday. If you see a white, not a black bow on a house or chicken bus, taxi, whatever, that signifies that a child has died. Thankfully, you don't see many of those, but that's how I caught on. Just the other day, I saw a white one. I thought, that's unusual. Here's something else I just found out. I just happened to be in someone's living room, and they had the 6 o'clock news on. By the way, watching the news in Latin America is always a good laugh. Reminds me of amateur night at my old high school AV department. Anyway, there was this kind of clueless reporter interviewing this lady who was president of an organization known as, get this, Latin Widows of Chicken Bus Drivers. I know, it sounds like a Saturday Night Live skit. Yep, there really is such an organization, it's no joke. And when you think about it, why not? I mean, chicken bus drivers have the highest mortality rate in Latin America. So naturally, there'd be a lot of grieving widows, and why wouldn't they get together? There's an organization for everything else, right? And their goal, of course, is to stop the senseless death of chicken bus drivers everywhere. And you know why so many chicken bus drivers bite the dust? It's because of the extortion rackets. And chicken bus drivers carry a lot of cash, and the bad boys and the gangs know that. So they're easy targets. They run the same routes every day, and there are areas in the boonies and in bad neighborhoods where the bad guys jump on and do their intimidations. They don't outright rob the driver. That would be like killing the host. Instead, they just demand extortion payments from them once a week, usually ranging from $25 to about $100 a week. And when the chicken bus driver falls behind or he just refuses to fork it over, that'll happen. That's when the bad boys will make an example out of one of these guys. Of course, that's not the only way chicken bus drivers bite the dust. Oftentimes, they just get into fatal accidents because they drink way too much. Recently, it's been reported that in upwards of 70% of all the accidents involving chicken buses, and that would mean chicken bus drivers, involve the driver who is technically drunk or visibly inebriated, which is why so many of them will just pull a hit and run, you know, leave the scene of an accident, or if it's a big accident and their chicken bus is really disabled and won't move, they'll just run. So, primary cause of death, extortionist. Secondly, accidents involving inebriated drivers. And thirdly, accidents involving imprudent driving, like, for example, passing on curves and driving way too fast for conditions. And finally, accidents due to chicken bus mechanical failure, the most common being brake failure. Because remember, the word maintenance is not in the Latin vocabulary. So what do Latin governments do about it? Almost nothing. Of course, there's a lot of talk about it, especially right after a fatal crash. Then after a few days, the talk dies down and the whole thing fades away. Are there solutions? Yes, there are very easy and cheap solutions. But remember, the people that take the chicken bus are pretty much non-entities with little or no political pull. They're the minimum wage grunt workers who can't afford to have a car or a motorcycle. Basically, they're the sweaty masses, the 70% of the population the government just doesn't give a damn about. Except right around election time, then the political puss bags make promises they never keep. Sound familiar? So anyway, there are enough widows of chicken bus drivers to have started a little organization, and they get some press once in a while, I hear, and they do offer solutions. What are those solutions? Well, number one, how about a voucher system so that the bus driver doesn't have any cash on him? as is the setup with most transit systems in the first world. You buy your ticket for mass transit in a little kiosk and hand the ticket to the driver or stick it in the computer reader. Now, combined with that, another great and surefire solution would be to have a military guy, a soldier, on every single chicken bus. That kind of presence would be a great deterrent to any kind of crime. Now, let's take Nicaragua, for example. According to recent stats, there are around 7,000 buses in Nicaragua, and they've got about 14,000 soldiers. And what do those soldiers do? Well, they just sit on their dead asses, do maneuvers, and just suck up resources. They're just basically dead weight. I mean, really, what are they training for? An imminent invasion by Costa Rica, Belize, or El Salvador? Please. I mean, come on, it's absolutely ridiculous for Latin countries to have standing armies if they're just doing nothing. Now, would that seem scary or comforting to you? You know, getting on a chicken bus and immediately running into a strapping 5 foot, 110-pound warrior with an Uzi and maybe two bullets? Well, think of it from the day-to-day bus passenger's point of view. Nicaragua's got 14,000 soldiers. Every other one could get stationed on a bus, and I doubt there's going to be any more extortion. And as far as gringos, well, you know, chicken buses are not supposed to be part of your mode of transportation. So even though the buses will be definitely safer, that's not going to stop the driver from getting faced on tequila. But I can tell you this, to the average woman that rides the bus, a soldier would be a godsend. Why? Because it's the women, especially the young ones, who get touched, bothered, and goosed, have their cell phones stolen and their purses cut by bad guys and their grabby, sticky little fingers. And having a soldier on board would instantly provide some security against that. Not that the soldiers aren't touchy-feely and rude, too. I mean, they're recruited from the lower, less educated classes in all Latin countries. In fact, the average private in a Latin military has about a sixth-grade education. Still, if trained up correctly, they could provide a valuable service there. So then why don't Latin governments try those measures? Again, you can only speculate that it's just too logical. Same thing about that supposed Trump wall. Who needs it when you've got a million-plus man army just burning through the cash and an endless number of surveillance drones? Again, just too logical for the likes of government. Any government. By the way, speaking of stupid-ass governments, I got this email from a visiting civil engineer. He says, "Johnny, I can't believe how most Latin American highways are so incredibly and poorly designed. Even the best of them have flaws in design that civil engineering students would spot in a second. If I only knew Spanish, I could straighten all these guys out. Great shows, Troy." Well, Troy, even if you knew your Spanish, that ain't gonna happen. But I can enlighten you as to why such a system exists. Well, it starts with loans or free first world money handed out by Japan, South Korea, the US, the World Bank, IMF, whatever. It lands in third world government coffers, and after the skim, the preferred contracts get handed out to designated first world contractors, and the rest to friends, relatives, and cronies. The first world contractors do their part, leave, and the Latin contractors never quite finish their part and leave a lot of loose ends. That's the Latin way. So you get a mix of excellent and horrible roads. And you know, everything looks perfectly fine when it's brand new until you drive on it. So even with brand new projects, you find cracks and fissures and unmarked lanes, exits, entrances, and curves pitch the wrong way for the rainy season, as well as ramps with impossibly steep grades that sometimes lead to nowhere. Which is why when you're on the main artery in Latin America, that would be the Pan American Highway, you'd think that road, with all the traffic it gets, should be a prime example and always kept up well. In fact, all throughout Latin America, all roads eventually lead to the Pan American Highway. But here's the reality. For a while, you're driving down a beautiful 8-lane concrete road. There are plenty of very nice stretches like that as the Pan American Highway winds itself through and around the big Latin American cities. And then you'll find, as you head a few kilometers out of most big cities, suddenly, the traffic is bottlenecked into two asphalt lanes. And then, when you're way out in the boonies, the asphalt gives out or just deteriorates down to a gravel road. In fact, if you're watching this show on YouTube now, you'll see a photo of a chicken bus rolling down the Ruta Interamericana, that's Pan American Highway in Spanish, and there's a big sign that the locals have put up in this stretch of the boonies that says, "Señores diputados, devuelven algo para reparar este tramo." which loosely translates to, "Dear legislators, you must give back something to us. Repair this section of road." And to me, they're being way too kind. They should be saying, but Latins are way too nice, "Fix this road, you dickhead politicians, or we'll toss you out on your can." But that's not going to happen. There are signs like that here and there throughout Latin America, and nothing ever happens. Unless the wife or mistress of one of those congressmen happens to hit a pothole, then that road becomes a priority repair job. And the reason for all that, surprise, surprise, is because the government owns and operates the roads. Now that's in stark contrast to internet service, the electric power grid, and cable TV. Those services are privatized and nearly first world dependable. Though admittedly, customer service sucks throughout Latin America, which in a backhanded way is part of your gringo advantage. But you knew that already, right? So bottom line, almost everything that really sucks in Latin America, things that delay you, make you wring your hands and get really pissed off, can be traced straight back to the corrupt, lard-ass, carbuckle-infested puss bags in government. And I mean that in the nicest, most upbeat Christian kind of way. That said, continuing along in the same vein, I just got an email from a longtime listener, Richard, who sent me a link to a blog where people are talking about the fact that the Guatemalan government has run out of passports. Say what? Yep, you gotta hear this. And of course, I've been reading about it and seeing it on the news here in Latin America, but Richard, from where he's sitting up in the first world, caught it on a blog recently and sent me the link. You gotta hear this. It tells exactly how screwed up Latin governments are, especially ones that are way off the gringo tourist trail like Guatemala. And why, no matter how screwed up it sounds at first, it is very good news for us gringos and expats. As usual, I'll comment as necessary. It's always necessary, right? Here's a posting that came in just today. This person's asking for passport help. "I'm posting on behalf of my girlfriend, who's a Guatemalan citizen living in the U.S. Her passport expired back in October of this year without her knowledge. She went to renew it at the Guatemalan consulate in Chicago this past December and was told it should be ready in a month. 1 month passed, and the consulate told us now it might take 2 months. 2 months passed, we went back, and they tell us Guatemala has run out of passports, and it could now take up to 4 months. You know, we have a trip planned to Japan coming up, and I'm starting to feel hopeless. Maybe we'll never get help with this. The consulate gave us numbers to call, but no one picks up the phone, and their email boxes are always full. Any suggestions on what to do? Is there a lawyer I could hire or a person I could contact to figure out what's going on? Hey, man, welcome to Latin America." Yeah, it's me, Johnny, here again. Man, that guy's girlfriend has a problem. Looks like his girlfriend's soon to be illegal in the U.S. because her passport's running out. Even though she was one of the very few that came through and got a visa, apparently, legally, without sneaking across the border like 95% of all the other Guatemalans that are up in the States. Okay, now let me read the reply. It says, "Oops, sorry, dude. Guatemala really did run out of passport booklets some months ago. Hiring a lawyer or talking to someone down in Guatemala or up there will not make a new booklet magically appear. Nobody can help you. In fact, in Guatemala City, they're putting a stamp in Guatemalan passport that renews it for a year. The only option for your girlfriend is to fly to Guatemala and get that stamp. However, she's going to have a lot of trouble at the U.S. border when she's going out because her passport's no longer valid. And you know, there's a rule that countries won't let you in unless you have at least 6 months valid on your passport. The newspapers in Guatemala say they'll have the new booklets by April." Yep, it's me again, Johnny. I say, fat chance. Insert laugh track here. Okay, then comes another reply. It says, "Thank you so much, but what infuriates me most about this situation is how clueless and unhelpful all the employees at the Chicago Guatemalan consulate have been. I've been pulling my hair out. Just yesterday, in fact, the employees told me they could give my girlfriend a stamp in her passport to travel back to Guatemala, but I don't know if anyone there could even help us. All right, me, Johnny, again, you know what? She's in a catch-22. Even if she gets that stamp, there's no guarantee airlines are going to honor that. It's a highly unusual circumstance. I've never heard of it. I've been to over 150 countries now, and I've never heard of a situation like that. Don't think it's going to fly." So anyway, that gives you an idea how disorganized and chaotic Latin governments are. And you know, with all the inconveniences, you still have to love it. I mean, come on, could you ever imagine a Big Brother-like state taking hold in a country like that? When the government of Guatemala somehow let the contract on the first world company who produces the passports lapse, I'll bet you a Bitcoin it was some congressman's incompetent brother-in-law or crony who was the middleman who made some money on that deal who screwed it up. Those things always play out that way. Oh, and by the way, that's not just an oddball one-off situation. Did you know that about 6 months ago, the government of Guatemala somehow screwed up a contract, let it lapse or bounced a check, whatever, with a big Canadian company that ran the Guatemalan government mail service, and now it lapsed. There is no government mail service in Guatemala. That would be as if the U.S. Postal Service suddenly closed up where you are. So now, if you want to get a package or a letter through, either to or from the States, it's all got to be done by UPS or FedEx and or one of the many private mailbox services. Now, what that means, of course, on your end in New Jersey, Milwaukee, Cleveland, or Seattle, you can't just drop a letter or a package into U.S. priority mail and expect it to get to Guatemala. Now, you could before when the Canadian company ran it. It was pretty dependable. I've used it on and off myself, but not for anything of value. I wouldn't ship anything that was worth maybe more than $25. Though it always did get through eventually. And now I understand, since most of the rest of the world doesn't know their mail service is shut down, there is a huge airplane hangar at the Guatemalan International Airport that's just filled with cards, letters, and boxes. All of that stuck there, sent from people who used regular mail from their countries sent to Guatemala. But the mail will get through if you use a courier service or one of those very dependable mail forwarding services coming out of my jammy. Did a show on that a while back, remember? So is regular Guatemala mail ever going to come back online? Yes, they're negotiating a new contract with the Canadian company, and I'm sure it'll get passed in a month or so. Maybe. The point is to let you see for yourself how Latin governments operate. So don't think that in your lifetime anyway, there's ever going to be a trace of a Big Brother state down here like you know it up in the States. Of course, there are those countries that are on the gringo tourist trail, like Costa Rica, Panama, and Colombia, whose governments are expanding rapidly and growing like cancer. Then there's off the tourist trail big government Latin countries like Argentina, Chile, and Uruguay too, with huge non-productive government sectors. But even so, no matter what laws they pass and how many government workers they hire, they still have got that lazy-ass Latin government mentality that's absolutely antithetical to a Big Brother state. So there'll be more rules, more taxes, more government fat, but at the same time, more chaos, disruptions, screw-ups, and disorder. So whatever Big Brother measures they try to put in place, because, you know, Latin governments always try to copy what the U.S. does. Tell you one thing, they'll be underfunded, poorly done, spottily enforced, and easily sidestepped by astute gringos. Now, in all the years I've been down here, I've stood in maybe 40 or 50 government lines. And it doesn't take long for you to pick up on the fact that everyone wants to work for government because, one, you can't get fired. Number two, you make about twice as much as same kind of job in the private sector, if such a job even exists. So isn't that attractive? You get paid double no matter how slow you work and you can't get fired. By the way, almost everyone in Latin America gets paid twice a month, on the 15th and the 30th. They call it down here the quincena, which means every 15 days. It's got the word quince in it, which means 15. By the way, there's a very easy way to figure out which day Latins are getting paid. It's the day you don't want to go to your bank. Because on that quincena, every 15 days, there's a line going out the door, sometimes 50 deep. Because you see, people are trying to get some cash. They're either depositing their checks to get some cash or they've had direct deposit and they need some cash. Because for common people anyway, Latin America runs on cash. Another point in their favor. In fact, you can talk about cashless societies all day long in the first world, but it ain't gonna happen down here, not in your lifetime. In fact, if you even bring the topic up at a party, eyes start glazing over. So then, are all Latin American government workers lazy-ass slugs? Well, they don't start out that way, but soon enough, while in government, they learn those bad habits. Because, you know, in government, there really is no accountability. You can't get fired. Except maybe if you screw the boss or the boss's wife and then shoot them both in the head when you're finished. Wait a minute, I guess up in the States you probably could get off. It could be a caffeine and stress-related event. I'm sure there's a psychiatric term for it. A lawyer could probably get you off and with back pay too. But only in the States, not in Latin America. So for all of you listeners who might be worried about the encroaching Big Brother effect here in Latin America, just remember that almost all government workers would rather be dancing, taking a break, or taking selfies on Facebook, poking piñatas, or drinking tequila, doing anything but what they were hired for. And if you doubt that, just remember that Guatemala ran out of passports and the check bounced to the Canadian company that was in charge of the Federal Mail Service. Oh, and by the way, for all you gringos and expats who've been waiting and waiting to get that little personal identification card, the one you're supposed to get when you're notified that your permanent residency has come through, called the DPI, you know, the one with the RFID chip that doesn't work? Well, Guatemala and many other Latin countries are months and months behind on issuing those. So if you've been approved for your residency and haven't had that card issued, you'll have to carry that paperwork with you if you're going in and out of the country. Because remember, in Guatemala, you have to be in the country one day a year to maintain your residency. And if you don't have that DPI card, you'll have to haul around your paperwork with you. In fact, some expats I know have been waiting more than a year for that card. So is that an inconvenience? Well, kind of, but I wouldn't have it any other way. While the U.S. government is goose-stepping along, picking up the pace every day, the government workers down here are waiting for the next song to come on the radio so they can start dancing. Okay, speaking of way off the gringo tourist trail, let's talk about Bolivia for a minute. You know, it is a rather nice country, really laid back, about 90% of the population being indigenous. Seems like no matter what happens with their scumbag politicians, life goes on slow and easy for most people, but it's still quite hard, since something like only 1 in 20 persons in the country has a motorcycle or a car, as opposed to the U.S., where cars outnumber the people. Bolivia is a very poor country, which is why I'm obliged to read you a few snippets from an article that came out just yesterday. Listen to this. Starts out by saying, Bolivia's President Evo Morales has a new museum and a nickname to go with it. The opposition has dubbed him Ego Morales, following the $7.1 million U.S. dollar museum he just built to glorify his life, story, and legacy. By the way, the word ego and its meaning are the same in both English and Spanish. Calling someone an egoist is an insult in English, and an egoista is an insult in Spanish. Anyway, the article goes on to say, Evo Morales led the inauguration of his own museum, called the Museum of the Democratic and Cultural Revolution. It's located in the remote village of Orioka, where he grew up. It says the building was constructed with government funds and features life-size statues and portraits, along with Morales' honorary degrees from several universities. The museum also holds a large collection of clothing and t-shirts from his soccer collection and childhood memories, along with a trumpet he used to practice on. The Minister of Culture, Vilma Alencoa, said it's now the largest museum in Bolivia, saying with tears in her eyes, boo-hoo, that the opening is an historic event for Bolivia. She said, this museum is the heritage of those who fought for the liberation of our people. Now, the town of Orinka is located in a remote village area and has only 900 inhabitants, 90% of them living in extreme poverty. That's according to an Associated Press report of February 3rd. Now, this is not the first time Morales has spent public funds on his own legacy, it says. In 2015, the Ministry of Communications published a book containing poems written by Morales titled The Process of Change Turned into Verse. Now, get this. It says in 2014, the Bolivian government distributed another book, this time for children, called The Adventures of Little Evo. I can't believe that. About the president's childhood, which includes illustrations like, for example, quote, Little Evo plays soccer and Little Evo goes to school. How about Little Evo brushes his teeth? So there you have it. That's what these Latin American poophead leaders do to glorify themselves and improve the lot of the extreme poor. Imagine that, a $7 million building in a town of 600. You know, this kind of stuff is almost too unreal to believe, but, well, Castro did it in his country, right? Oh, by the way, you might remember I reported a couple of shows ago that Evo Morales tried to have the Constitution changed so that he could run for president forever. Fortunately, the people weren't having any of it and voted down the referendum. By the way, all this reminds me of when I was last in Caracas, Venezuela, about 2 years ago now. Back then, I visited two of the biggest shopping malls, and each of them had a Hugo Chavez store where you could buy t-shirts and statues and games, apparel, uniforms, hats, anything and everything to outfit your Hugo Chavez action figure collection. That's right. There were action figures in that store. One presidential, one in a general's uniform, and one in camouflage for the Bush. I'm not kidding you. He's such an icon in that country. He's got his own stores. By the way, 2 years ago when I last visited the place, he'd been dead for a long time already. Still, Hugo had his stores. And I'm not talking about Hugo Boss. I'm talking Hugo ex-boss. My one regret is I didn't buy a Hugo Chavez bobblehead doll. You know, it would have looked cute alongside my Bush, Clinton, Obama, and Pope Francis bobblehead wall of shame. Too bad. All right, we're getting towards the end of the show now, and a lot of people have been sending me emails asking to get on the early bird list for my upcoming July 2017 Expat Insider Seminar. You too can get on that list. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget, the best way to get your ducks lined up for your own Plan B is to go to expatplanb.com and check out my Expat Essentials course. Now, Expat Eddie, who just came back from Europe, says, man, Johnny, it's a disaster over there. He says smart gringos have two choices. One, vote with their feet, or get some knee pads soon because, like the Europeans, Americans are about to spend a lot of time on them. So what's it going to be for your Plan B? Are you getting ready to vote with your feet? Or cave in and get ready to spend a lot of time on your knees? So you might be thinking, are you throwing in the towel by deciding to have a Plan B and voting with your feet? Well, people with no imagination or initiative might say that. So let them. The fact is, you're just picking battles you know you can win, as opposed to fighting the big battle up in Seattle or Cleveland, the one you already lost. If you plan on holing up in your basement with stacks of food and ammo, don't forget Big Brother has tanks, F-16s, drones, and more. Go ahead, do the macho thing till the bitter end. Round up your neighborhood watch buddies, put on the camo gear, and charge up the hill. However, for those of us who want to preserve our assets and avoid confrontation with Big Brother, a battle you'll always lose, if you, like me, prefer to watch the first world go to hell in a handbasket from a nice, safe place in Latin America, just go to expatplanb.com. Check out my Expat Essentials course and get your ducks lined up now.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.